Welcome to What the Bump, a birth story podcast. My name is Jen. I am a former labor and delivery nurse who stepped away from bedside nursing after having two babies of my own to become a full-time birth doula. This podcast is where you come to hear birth stories of all different kinds. I believe every birth story is unique. Every birth story deserves to be told and deserves to be heard. So this is a platform where we do just that. Anybody and everybody is welcome to come on the podcast to share their birth story, even if you think your birth was boring or not very interesting. There's always something that somebody else can learn from it. So through this, I hope that we learn and we grow together. Welcome to another episode of What the Bump. Today we have Patricia coming on the podcast to share her birth story. So thank you for being here, Patricia. I think it's like, it's 6 a.m. where I'm at. I think it's like 8 p.m. where you're at. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So I think this is the first podcast I've ever done where we've had this big of a time difference. Normally it's like 2 hours. So it took us a little bit to align this to get it to where it wasn't like the middle of the night for her, middle of the night for me. So I'm excited to finally get on this podcast with you and hear all about your birth story.
Thanks so much for having me. Yes, we're over in Korea right now. And so it's about 8 p.m. our time. So thanks for making the time to meet up with me.
Of course. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, you just said you're from Korea, so I'm sure that plays a big role into just who you are. So give us a summary of who you guys are.
Yeah. So for some background context, we're stationed here in Korea for military, and that's how me and my spouse, how we met, because I used to be active duty Air Force and he's still active duty Army. And so we actually met while we were both stationed in Germany near each other. I was there for Air Force, he was there for Army. And so that's how we met. And then my background is a little bit, it's a big background. I wear different hats. And so I actually got my training and education in veterinary medicine. And so I'm a DVM in that respect. And then in the Air Force, I'm a public health officer because I still do the Air National Guard part-time remotely. And so, if you fast forward a little bit, Sean and I met when we were both stationed in Germany, and then we both got stationed back stateside. I was in Oklahoma, he was stationed in Kansas. And then once we got married, I finished up my active duty career and then became a veterinarian in Kansas. And so depending on what conversation I'm in or depending on what room of people I'm in, the conversation will go into different directions in that regard. But he's originally from Pennsylvania. That's where he grew up. And he's a psychiatric nurse practitioner. That's where he did all of his college work and all of his training. And then I'm originally from Oklahoma. So a lot of my family is back in Oklahoma right now.
Wow. Is there anything you guys don't do? You're like, you know, a psychiatric nurse practitioner in the Army, Air Force, veterinarian. Like, you guys seem like you can just like run a mini world all on your own. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, and it's worked out really well. And I actually got into yoga for stress management during my Air Force career, because I was stationed in Korea for the Air Force back in 2017, 2018. So started yoga and then became a yoga instructor and then got certified as a doula when we were getting stationed back here in Korea. Because
I realized yoga instructor and doula.
I know it's pretty entertaining. So depending, like I said, what room I'm in and what people I'm talking to, the conversation can go any and all directions. And I became a birth doula. I got the certification I was pregnant. I was just researching so much and looking into so much information. So it was like a natural segue, like, oh, I'm interested in yoga. I do my yoga classes and I teach that. And so it was just a natural segue to support women in birth as well. And it was a good way for us to be in Korea with Sean working full time. And then I can support women part time and through their journeys.
Yeah. I could see like a dinner conversation. Somebody's like, oh, I have a question about my dog's hip. And then somebody else is like, oh, and I have a question about like this weird pain I'm feeling in pregnancy. And then you're absolutely right. Like it's funny when you say like, yeah, conversations can go all over the place because wow, it could with you guys.
It's totally, totally true. Like my last doula client, I would be over at her house and then like they would have like a question about their dog's eye. And then we'd go into like, okay, comfort positions during labor. Like, let's talk about that and everything in between. And so it's interesting. It makes for a lot of fun.
I love that. So what are you like currently? I know you said that you have a remote position right now. You do some part-time birth work. Is that kind of the main hat that you're wearing right now?
Yes. And main hat I'm wearing right now is mom taking care of our new baby. And then on the side, I'm doing the doula work and then some private yoga classes. And so that's the main stuff I'm doing right now over here and setting my own schedule with that regard and then taking care of our new baby.
That's awesome. Okay. So how old is your baby?
She's about 4 months old. And then on the 19th, she'll be 5 months old.
Wow. That is awesome. So tell us about, leading up to getting pregnant with her and then finding out you were pregnant.
Yeah. And so Sean and I, we were really intentional about getting pregnant. And I know some people like, oh, it's an accident or they weren't not trying and things like that. But for us, we were very, very intentional about it. And so like right when we got married in February 2022 is when we started actively trying. And then it took us a full year to get pregnant with her. Some of that was because I think like I was gone for work things for veterinary conferences. And then he was also gone for work for military training during that time period. And then in addition to that, we also got checked and everything for any type of infertility issues. Cause I wanted to be proactive about that because when we started trying, I was like 32 and we ended up having her when I was 33. But so we were very proactive about getting our health checked. And so I got a fertility workup just to be sure. And then also Sean did as well. And he actually has the male factor infertility. And so a lot of people don't know that like their spouses probably need to get checked as well. Absolutely. There was like a lot of focus on women's health and women's reproductive health, but also like he's really good about sharing and he's really proactive about letting people know like, hey, there's men's health as well that you need to get checked for. And it's really, really simple. Like in the veterinary world, we do it all the time, but for some reason, like in the human world, guys are a little bit like shy about going and getting like checked out, but it's like super easy. You just like look just to get medical, you just look at the sample underneath a microscope. And then that's the main check for male factor fertility values, which a lot of people may not know for the sperm. It's motility, morphology, and then like the number of sperm.
Yeah.
And so if you have one of those that's decreased, then that puts you in that category of affected fertility. So he had one of those factors. And so we ended up conceiving our daughter when we did a round of IUI, the intrauterine insemination.
Gotcha.
And that worked really, really well for us because the research that I did, we could have gotten pregnant on our own, but it could have taken from the research I did like up to 2 to 3 years to really make that happen. And so on kind of a female timeline and like, those factors are involved and like, I feel like when you're ready to get pregnant and you're ready to have a baby, like each month is just can be so long and drawn out. Yeah. Yes.
It's so true. You are so ready. When you were saying that, you're like, as a female, it's like, I'm on a time clock. And I was like, yeah. And like mentally, you're also just like impatient in a way, when you're ready, you really are ready.
Yeah. And it's so true. And so that was one thing that really worked well for us was the intrauterine insemination. And I call it like when natural needs help.
Yes, because literally.
It's like when natural just needs a nudge, like in the right direction.
Yeah.
And luckily that worked on the first try for us. And that was great. And honestly, it was like a really simple process. Like you go into the doctor's office and they do the procedure. And it was kind of funny. I was joking with the techs and with the doctors and stuff. Cause I was like, oh, I've done this in like horses and cattle, but you all do it in humans. And so
that is very true. Okay. So,
so yeah.
One big question that I have that I'm sure like everybody is thinking about is one, you're obviously at a military base, correct? During all of this.
So yes, we're stationed. He's stationed at the military base and then we actually live off base.
Okay. So, and, but you're in Korea during this.
Oh, that's a good question. We were in Kansas.
Oh, okay.
He was still stationed in Kansas and I had my veterinary job in Kansas when we were going through most of this process.
Okay. And then during your pregnancy, did you guys move back to Korea?
Yes. So to fast forward a little bit, we found out that I was pregnant and I took the pregnancy test the day before Sean's birthday. And so I held on to the secret for like a full 24 hours and then wow. surprised him on his birthday. And so I was really proud of myself for being able to hold on to that. And then when I was 35 weeks pregnant is when I landed in Korea and we got all of our household goods and got all moved into our house and everything, which worked out well because like that nesting period hit right when we were like unpacking all of our stuff and getting wow. moved into our house in Korea. And so, yeah, just talked with my OB in Kansas and they were like, yeah, you can fly at any weeks. Just make sure you're taking breaks every hour, walking around the plane, doing stretches, staying really well hydrated. Yeah. So that's how I got over here.
Well, I have a lot of questions about that, like 35 week move and when you get to Korea and what all that looks like. But before we jump like right into that part, take us back a little bit, like through your pregnancy. So you were in the US and everything, how was your pregnancy? How was that first trimester? I know the second trimester is normally like kind of a sweet spot, but, how was pregnancy for you?
Pregnancy was really, really good for me. I really enjoyed being pregnant. I enjoyed that miracle that's going on inside of you.
Absolutely.
And it's just a nice pregnancy for me. And honestly, it really helped like when I had like stressful days at work, it actually kind of helped center me to where it was like, okay, don't get overly stressed. You just want to take care of yourself, take care of your mind, take care of your body so that your baby's healthy. And it took a while in the first trimester for it to like click with me. Cause like positive pregnancy test, right? But
totally.
For me, it really clicked like when we had that confirmation ultrasound mm-hmm. because you don't know exactly because there's some ways you can get a positive pregnancy test that might not in result be a baby, mm-hmm. like if it's a chemical pregnancy, for example, or something like that. So I was very cautiously optimistic, but I didn't have any major symptoms even in the first trimester yeah. except for just extreme exhaustion. It was like there was an off switch whenever I sat down. I would just be so sleepy.
Oh my gosh.
And be falling asleep. And so, and it kind of tracked like that through the majority of the pregnancy. I was doing yoga every day. I was walking 1 to 2 miles every day, just because that really felt good to me. And that was really beneficial. And so, no bad symptoms at all.
Awesome. Okay. So fast forward to you moved to Korea at 35 weeks. First off, I like literally cannot imagine. I don't know. I think about myself at 35 weeks and I'm like, what? I just props to you because I think I would have been freaking out internally. And I'm sure you might've been a little bit just because, like at 35 weeks, like you probably still have a month, but like you could also have like 2 weeks. And that's a really, really big move. Like we're not just talking like, oh, you moved states and moved houses, which like is still really hard at 35 weeks. You really moved. So what was that transition like? How did you, and also being in the military, I'm sure it's a little bit different, like healthcare wise. I have so many questions about the healthcare side of it. So when you get to Korea, like what does that look like as far as healthcare in Korea and especially then throwing in like the military aspect of it at 35 weeks? You're right there at the end of your pregnancy. So what did that look like? And then how did you plan for it? Like I want all the details.
Yeah. And so it actually went pretty smoothly. Honestly, I had a lot of support from my husband, Sean, and the timing worked out well. Cause like I got to have a baby shower with my side of the family in Oklahoma. They threw me a gorgeous baby shower around like the July timeframe. And then we got to have a baby shower with my husband's family in Pennsylvania in September. Mm-hmm. on the way to Korea, kind of like a stopover. So I think that really helped. Like we were able to like break up the trip a
Okay.
bit, and like Sean helped with all my luggage and everything like that. So that was good. But that transition actually went really smoothly. I think I just try not to overthink it too much because it's just like that's the situation you're in. And all
And
I
you're kind
kept,
of used to that, I'm sure, you know, like you're used to the big aspect of that.
exactly. And anybody who's from a military family knows that it's like your life is yours, but also it's not yours. Like you're getting told what to do in a lot of aspects and where to go and where to live. And we were excited to live in Korea, and I had lived there before, so we were mostly just really excited about it. And then I just kept reminding myself, like, okay, this is easier pregnant than it would be with like a kid or a toddler or
Yeah.
something. So I just kind of reminded myself of that. It's like, well, she's easy to take care of while she's in my belly. And this is probably a perfect time to do this trip. And it'll keep my mind off of things as like a due date approaches. And so, but yeah, we got here, and Sean had already like picked out a house for us. And so we knew where we were going. And then in the military healthcare system, I'll speak to what I know about it. And so here overseas, you go to the on-post military hospital,
Okay.
so Department of Defense facility, as Department de Defense Health Agency, DHA facility. And so you'll hear a lot of that vernacular and a lot of that terminology. It's like it's all same if it's a military hospital, Department of Defense hospital, all in that same kind of catch-all. And so if you're stateside, a lot of times you'll either go to a medical military clinic or you'll be able to be seen like on the economy, as
Okay.
they say. But here, all my care was transferred over to the military hospital.
Okay.
And so they have a labor and delivery ward, for example. They don't have a NICU, and so if you deliver earlier than a certain amount of weeks, then you actually have to go deliver somewhere on the Korean economy in the one of the Korean hospitals.
Okay.
But I can't speak to that so much just because I know that process, but I did go through that process.
Okay.
But essentially, you don't pick an OB. You just whoever is on call, like the night that you go into labor, that's the doctor that you get for that evening or for that day. And so a lot of times the recommendation is like, oh, find an OB that like fits with your goals or fits with like your birth choices and find somebody that supports that. And it's like, well, you're really limited under the military healthcare system. Like you get who you get essentially. And so that was one item that I was really passionate about, like my birth choices and my birth goals. And so that's one thing that kind of led me down the path of doing like so much research and so much preparatory work so that I was like ready for the birth and labor process, no matter like who was attending the birth in that medical capacity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you had mentioned like through all the deep dive of the research and education that you were doing throughout your pregnancy, you fell down the path of getting certified as a doula. So, I'm sure by the time that you gave birth, you know, your head is in this space of like, I don't want to say like that doula is like you're like fighting the system because you're not always. That's not our main goal at all. But there are times where you do a little bit, but it's more so just advocating for yourself, understanding and truly knowing what you want, not just, you know, following in suit of what you're kind of just told and blindly following it necessarily. So, what were some of those things, you know, that going into your birth, you know, you knew you were going to be birthing at the military hospital. You kind of didn't know what kind of provider you were going to get. Like it was a toss up. It was, you know, you could have got somebody who was great and supportive of the things that you wanted. You could have got somebody who was pushing back on everything. And correct me if I'm wrong, but just like, you know, from my experience being an L&D nurse, and I actually know a couple OBs who used to be in the military. I feel like most of the time they're a little bit more on that rigid, more like medicalized, like this is how things are done kind of side. And again, I'm sure this fluctuates greatly. But, you know, what were some of those things that you were preparing for?
Yes. And so I was preparing for really a lot of things that you said. And then what, like one of the main questions I asked, because at my appointments was like, There was one doctor who was really, really good. She was a civilian doctor for, I think, like 28 years back stateside. And then she volunteered to move here to support military women, military families, but like had really good rapport with her, had good conversations with her, very evidence-based. And I essentially, asked the staff, I was like, hey, like, and the doctors that I encountered, I'm like, what's your experience with physiological birth? How comfortable are you that? How many have you attended? And that sort of thing. Not that it really mattered like the day of birth, but just so they could really have it in their brains of like, these are my priorities here. And so just be ready to support that.
Yeah.
One of the main conversations too was, I don't know if it's like this everywhere, but like right at 38 weeks, 39 weeks, they start talking to you about induction. And I think they're coming at it from like a safety perspective that like, if you have a medical reason for needing an induction, like high blood pressure that's not managed, or maybe baby isn't doing well, they start talking to you about that, but it can seem a lot like they're kind of pushing it on you.
Absolutely.
And so I just made sure I was very clear with them about my goals, which was I will only do an induction if it's medically necessary, not the what ifs that might happen down the road. And so that was just really my mantra was like, am I currently okay? Is baby currently okay? And if so, then we're just going to keep it status quo. And I just tried to be really minimal with all of my appointments. The ultrasound that we got was like the confirmation ultrasound and then the 20-week anatomy scan. Mm-hmm. And after that, I didn't get any imaging, any ultrasounds. It was just Doppler checks for fetal heart rate, fetal heart tones. And that really worked quite well for me because I didn't have any concerns. I didn't have any worries. I just felt like everything was okay. Mm-hmm. And, I just was really, really trusting in my body. And I think a lot of that trust came from also the veterinary medicine world where we see animals give birth all the time. And it's really a non-event. It's like one day you wake up and there's like, oh, there's two new calves out in the field. Like, okay, great. That went well.
I always
overnight.
Think about that. Like you guys don't see us like, and I get it, you know, pregnancy is normal. Like if things start to, you know, come up that's abnormal in pregnancies, you do have some red flags. And thank God we have medicine for those times. But most of the time, pregnancy and birth is so normal when we like leave it alone and we don't go digging for red flags. And mm-hmm. I think about it with animals all the time. I'm like, you don't see us like scheduling a horse for a 35-week growth scan. And, you know, the minute they go into labor, we're like trying to give it an epidural. And no shame to these things, you know, but like,
but as an example, as a comparison, really exactly. Mm-hmm.
Just like you said, you wake up and you're like, oh, look, the dog had six puppies overnight and cool. Everything's great.
Right. And that's what it is. And so I just really had that very grounded respect for birth and how it really needs to be the majority of the time. It can really be a hands-off experience. And it just needs to be like a comfortable experience because you'll see it with animals all the time. Like if there's a lot going on, a lot of commotion, yeah. they will go and they'll hide themselves away. They'll find like a nice quiet patch of pasture, or they'll find like a quiet, nice spot in the house or wherever they're at to like get away from that and have that experience happen. And so, and like as another example, I think women don't realize like how much choice you have. It's not prescriptive, like these appointments, even though accidentally I think medical professionals make it sound that way, because like whenever I would come into my appointments, they'd be like, okay, we're going to do an ultrasound check today. We're going to do a cervical check. And then we'll see how you're doing. You and baby are doing. And I would just remind them, I'd be like, no, thank you. I'm not doing ultrasound today and no cervical check. No, thank you. And then they would be like, oh, okay. Yeah. We'll just scratch that off the list. But I know that, and I know that I could speak up for that and have that approach during my appointments. And there's like several people, so many women that I talk to, they're like, oh yeah, I thought that was required. And it's like,
yeah,
no, like no one can do require anything without, yeah, no one can put their hands on you mm-hmm. or your body without you actually having a conversation. And and actually talking it through. You know, like emergency circumstances
aside,
as outliers aside, but especially your everyday appointments like that.
Yeah.
Does that help answer a little bit of that question?
Yeah, absolutely. It answers a lot of it. I kind of just had like, you know, I had no idea of what it looks like or how it works. And back to kind of what you said about just being like, yeah, no, thank you. Sorry. I have like a lingering cough or something. But I had joked, we had a Zoom. We do like monthly Zooms with our clients. And we had one that was about advocating for yourself, you know, during pregnancy, during birth. And one of the jokes I had in the beginning, I was like, okay, everybody like come off mute and just say no. And then like, I kind of joked, I was like, okay, like that's literally all I have for you today. And obviously that was a joke, but I really, really wish every pregnant woman could just, I know it's hard. And I know they make you feel like if I don't do this, I'm putting myself in danger or my baby in danger. And they fear monger you into it sometimes, maybe make you feel like you feel kind of like stupid if you don't do it. That's something I hear a lot from clients. And if we could just learn the simple word of no, taking back control over our bodies and our babies. If something doesn't sit right with you, if you've had a beautiful, healthy, normal pregnancy, no red flags, and all of a sudden they're wanting to do certain interventions with no reasoning and things like that. Again, these things have a time and a place in certain situations, but most of the time you can say no. I mean, you always can say no. But no is like one of my favorite words. And I wish everybody just learned the word no.
Right. And that was really my mantra through the whole pregnancy. It was just like, no, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. No,
and
thank you.
And a lot of times the provider just needs to write down like in their documents, like, hey, patient was educated, patient declined.
Yep.
And it's really not that big of a deal sometimes. I think we build it up in our heads a little bit more for certain things, but that's like a huge thing. And I understand where women are coming from. It's like, you didn't go through 8 years of medical school plus residency. And it just works out. I think just like you said, if something doesn't sit right with you or you have more questions, just make sure you get those answers, because maybe they don't have enough time in like your 20-minute time slot, but that's okay. Just say, hey, if you don't have time today, email me, please email me those numbers. Because, or if they say, like, for example, in one of my appointments, they were like, okay, well, we will encourage induction if you get past, the 40 weeks plus however many days mark, because stillbirth rises exponentially. I said, okay, exponentially, can you provide the numbers on that? Because I knew in my mind, it's like, okay, exponentially, yes, but I even have like the stats here in my notes where in some studies, it was like, in one study in California, 3,800,000 women was like the study, and the stillbirth went up from like 0.02% to 0.1%, like as the weeks went on. So it was still way less than that 1% mark, still exponential. Technically, yes. You can describe it that way. But I say that as just an example, because that word is scary, right? Like, yeah. If you say the word stillbirth to somebody and they're approaching like their due date, and then you're also in the same breath talking about like your induction process, that's a very intimidating situation. Absolutely. To be in if you don't have like the doula training, a medical background, you don't have that practice advocating for yourself, because most women haven't really been in a medical setting until they're pregnant. And so that kind of a tangent there, but it was a big part of like my appointments and just how I was going into those aspects.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, because they say things like that. And that's the fear mongering, you know. I've heard so many times like, oh, stillbirth rates double past your due date. And you're like, oh my God, double. Like that is huge. But everything, what's the numerical risk? Well, it goes from about like, and again, don't exactly quote me on this, but it's like the 0.02 or 0.01 to like 0.02. So yeah, it doubles from 0.01 to 0.02, or it's something around there, a very, very small number. But double a small number is still an insanely small number. But when you just say the word double, it sounds so astronomical and so like, oh my gosh, like this could be really bad. So, you know, getting that actual legitimate like risk is super important than just throwing out an increase, an extreme increase, doubling, you know, I couldn't agree more. It's a good little like side note.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to ask those clarifying questions and
Totally.
to get that information, because then we had a good conversation about that. Cause I happen to have some studies saved, like part of my birth choices and birth goals, like all the information, I just saved a bunch of studies. And it's like, okay, well, I'm a 33-year-old woman. I don't smoke. I'm of good, healthy weight. And a lot of those studies shown that stillbirth increases when you have increased maternal age, if you're smoking or if you're obese. And so those factors just didn't apply to me. So once we got into like an actual conversation, it went in a good direction, but it's interesting the phrases that are used. Exactly.
So
like you said.
Did your OB know those numbers, or did you have to did you have to give them a little education?
I brought it up. I was like, so what, from what I've researched, and then we went into it. And then from then on, the conversations were much more tangible.
But when you asked, like, what is the actual risk? Did you ask that, or did you just kind of say it?
Oh, I asked it, and then they didn't know it off the top of their
head. Okay, that's
and
what
then
I was going to ask.
And then I brought up what I did know. I'm like, okay, so from what I know, and then
see, here's the thing.
Appointments.
If you're going to say things like that, though, like, you need to know the numbers. Like, if you're going to tell me that stillbirth increases this exponential rate, I want you to know those numbers. You know, it's
right.
That's important to know your facts. I mean, like you said, not to take a hit on like the medical community or whatever, but you know, that's a scary thing. And that's a really big statement to say to a woman who is nearing her due date at 40 weeks pregnant, to throw that out there. You know, that just brings so much fear. And sometimes I think we are, just as medical providers, and I've been there as a nurse too, like, we're not cognizant of the things that we're saying to people. And so I just think if you're going to say something like that, you know, you better have those facts to back it. So I knew the answer was that they didn't know the statistic. I just wanted to ask you.
Exactly. Like, that's not a casual statement.
No.
Especially for me, like in my first pregnancy and everything, it's not a casual statement. And so I just try to support women, and I just try to let them know, like, ask those clarifying questions, call the nurse line. If there's not time, like during the appointment, call back, leave a message with your provider, whatever like patient messaging system your provider has, like, get those questions answered.
Yeah.
Like, that's gonna make you feel better and make you feel more confident in your choices. Yeah. If you're making a choice based off of all of the aspects.
Okay. That was all really, really good. I love that. Now tell us about going into labor. Tell us about your birth story.
Yes. Okay. Yes. The birth story.
Yes. What we're all here for.
I know.
Yeah, you're good.
And so, I'm not sure why, but like, I thought I had all the time in the world. Like, in my mind, I thought I was going to go to around like 42 weeks or something, and I was going to be like totally fine with that. And so I had little things like planned around the house. Like, I was going to write my thank you notes from like the September baby shower, and I had all these things to do. And my parents were coming into town. And so I was like, just going to get some stuff ready for them. And then so my dad landed in Seoul, Korea, and then my husband was able to go like drive and pick him up. And funny story, I was like, oh, I'll come with you to the airport, because like, I don't want you to like just be driving by yourself. And then he was like, well, it's pretty close to your due date, so like, just in case you go into labor, maybe you should just stay back. So my dad got into town. I didn't go into labor that night, so that was fine. But then the next morning, I did go into labor, and it was kind of interesting because Sean, my husband, he just left for work and like a normal day. And I was like 39 weeks and 4 days.
Okay.
So 3 days prior to my due date. And we said goodbye in the morning. And when he left me, I was actually like in child's pose in our bed, which is like not an uncommon thing for me to do, just because it feels good to like stretch out and everything like that. And so he didn't notice anything was up, but I had started having like some slight cramps, and then I was just brushing them off. I was like, oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Just like discomfort, however it's going on. And so It was, that was around probably, he left the house like close to 8 in the morning. And so I ended up getting up shortly after that. I got dressed. My dad's in the living room kitchen area. We start to like make some breakfast. And then I'm having these cramps on and off like every 10 minutes or so. And I was just like, oh, I guess this is just gas pains, or this is just annoying like cramps going on. And it's funny to me that I was just like in such denial, and it's like, and like, I'm a trained birth doula and like veterinarian. It's like, I was just ignoring all these things. Cause in my mind I was convinced like, oh, it'll be another couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Like, it's not actual labor. And so I'm up and I'm trying to get breakfast going. My dad and I are like chit chatting. And then it's getting to the point where I'm like, I'm really uncomfortable. And I eat some of my food. It was like oatmeal, and my dad made some eggs, and it's getting to the point where like, I have a couple bites, but I'm like, man, I am just like really struggling. Like with these like stomach pains, quote unquote, that I'm explaining them away from. And so I end up just going into our bathroom, because there's a private bathroom off of our bedroom, and I'm just hanging out in there. And then, like physiologically, it's kind of common to start having like some diarrhea happening. Absolutely. And like start to feel nauseous and, start to vomit. It's just like, this is a birth podcast, so we're just going to go there.
Absolutely.
And so as time kind of progresses, I'm just having these like stomach cramps. I'm having like some diarrhea going on, intestinal mischief, I'll call it. And then I start feeling like really nauseous. And I texted my husband, Sean, and I said, like, hey, I'm thinking I might be having like some pre-labor. Like, I was calling it like pre-labor stuff. I don't know if it's like going to be prodromal labor. In my mind, I was just ready for the long haul.
Absolutely.
I was like, labor can take days. Like, okay, this is just the beginning. And so I texted him. I was like, hey, you might want to come back home, just so you're here if I need you. And he was like, okay, I'll come home right now. I was like, no. Before you come back, just head to the grocery store and get all the stuff on the grocery list so that my mom and dad have like some stuff all here in town. And he was like, I don't think that's a priority right now. And I'm texting him, and I was like, no, yeah, just go to the grocery store. I'm fine. You have time. It's great. And so from his point of view, it's really funny how he tells it. He's like frantically trying to like go through the grocery list and get everything and get back home. And so anyways, I'm still in the bathroom, and by around like 10 a.m., like I'm in like full active labor. Wow. Like, once I clued in, I was like, these quote unquote stomach pains are coming like every 5 minutes now. And I am vomiting. I'm feeling very nauseous. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is actually labor. This is going to happen today. And so, I'm just doing what I can to, and this is like the first time I'm telling the whole story through and through. So kind of thinking through things and remembering everything as I go. And so I'm just in our bathroom, and then I start playing like a Bob Marley playlist, like, because it was just like really rhythmic and really zen. And by this point I'm completely laboring on the toilet, just because that like felt the most comfortable positioning for me. And it felt the safest for like, okay, if I have anything coming out of any areas, like it'll be easy cleanup at that point.
Yeah.
And my dad didn't know anything was going on at this point, because I wasn't really making much noise. And he's just in the living room, like hanging out. Apparently he had like talked to my sister and my mom, and he was like, oh yeah, Patricia's just having like a, probably like a food reaction. And like, so she's in the bathroom, not feeling very good.
Oh my gosh. And,
so at any rate, Sean finally gets home, and yeah, he gets home around like that 10 a.m. point, and I'm immediately just like in the zone, and I ask him to like, hey, can you get a bath going? Because the contractions were really picking up at that point, and I was kind of, I was making sure to like breathe through them. I was trying to ride the wave, because my goals were to do it like all natural and like no interventions. And so I just asked him to like draw a bath. And in my logical brain, I was like, oh, that could slow down labor because anecdotally that can happen sometimes. But that's kind of what I wanted in that moment, just because things were getting pretty intense, like pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking like, I got to find some way to really like handle this and be comfortable if this is going to be how it's going to like flow and go. And so luckily he was able to like get the bath going for me. And once I got in that bathtub, and it's just like a normal average, like bathtub, it's nothing special. But once that like hot water, like hit my abdomen and like my lower back and everything, that felt amazing.
Yes.
That was just really, really probably like the best comfort measure, that could happen. And, at that point, my mom is actually like mid-air, like actually flying from the States to Seoul. And so Sean's trying to take care of me and also like coordinate an airport taxi to pick her up because she, like for some context, she didn't even know I was actually in labor because when she had taken off, it was just kind of like a normal thing. We were all just saying like, hi, bye, time zone, time changes and everything. So Sean's trying to take care of me and also like trying to get her like an airport taxi and everything. And so he comes back into the bathroom. I'm still in the tub. And I wasn't really verbal at that point. I was just really, really inward. Like that's just where my mind and my body went to cope with things. And I just told him, I said, we should probably time these. And so he was like, okay, yeah, I'll time the next contractions. And so like a wave comes and goes. And then I look at him and I'm like, okay, how far apart are they? And he looked at me, he goes, I can't tell when you're having a contraction. And in my mind, I was like, these are so intense. Like, how can you not tell? But I didn't say any of that. I was just like, okay, I'm going to tap the side of the tub, like when it starts and when it ends. Okay.
I love it.
We did three like that. And then, he didn't tell me this, but like his app was kind of yelling at him.
Yes.
Like, you need to go to the hospital. You need to go to the hospital. Yep. It was like blinking red, but he was so smart and so intuitive that he didn't let me in on any of that. But he was just like, okay, I'm going to go text, Diana, who was our doula.
Okay.
And that's how much I believe in doulas, right? Like I am a birth doula and I still hired a doula because.
So was she somebody also on the base?
She lives off base
okay.
well, but she's associated with the base because her husband is stationed here.
Okay. Gotcha. So she's from the States.
Yes.
Okay.
She's originally she's Colombian, like from the country Colombia. And but also she's US citizen. Cause like, her and her husband got married.
Okay.
Awesome. So she's been in the States for a long time.
Okay.
But she, for some background, she's been a birth worker for over 8 years now. Like she's been a doula and she actually started, all of her clinical hours to become a midwife. So she's doing awesome. That here as well. But, for this birth story, Sean, when the contraction app was like yelling at him to go to the hospital, I was still like zenned out in the tub. Like the playlist was still kind of going. He was like, okay, I'm going to go text Diana so she can come over. And so she can start heading this way. And it's funny looking back, like I thought I would have all the time in the world for early labor. Like I had all these plans. I was like, oh, we can go for like a hike. We can go walking to get things going, to get things moving. I had bought like, I had purchased like cupcake mix to like bake cupcakes in early labor so we can bring those to the staff at the hospital and be able to do all this stuff. But no, once it kicked off, like we were off to the races.
You skipped, you know, this sounds a lot like my first birth story.
Really?
You skipped early labor and I was the same thing. Like it was just out the gate. You skipped early labor.
So. Essentially, that's what it seemed like. I might have had like maybe like that 8 a.m. to
like an hour 8
a.m.
of it
to like 10 a.m. maybe some early labor, but I was just listening to my body. Like I wasn't timing things.
Yep.
Like we never put like a minute to the waves, to the contractions or how far apart they were. And so yes, our doula got to the house, our house here in Korea, off post, like we were talking about. And so she gets to the house, and I don't even think the way Sean tells it, like she was here maybe for like a couple hours, and then one thing led to another, and like we did not even make it to the hospital. I ended up just giving birth to our baby girl right here in the house, like wow. in our bathroom, just because it was all happening like very, very fast and very smoothly. Like there was no indications that anything was going amiss or that was anything that was going wrong. Everything was just going like very smoothly and very easily, honestly, if you can put that word onto it. I mean, yeah. Labor is hard. I wouldn't necessarily call it easy, but everything was going very smoothly. And then there was one point when our doula got to our house, and her and Sean, they're like helping me cope through the waves and everything. And they start to say, okay, well, we need to start going to the hospital. Yeah. Like this baby's coming. So let's take a couple more waves and like, see how we can do it. And I was like, okay, all right. Yeah, I can do that. I was like trying to like talk myself into it. Like, sure. We can.
That's like
happen.
A big task to like get up, get in the car, go to the hospital. Like, yeah, it's that's
it is. It totally is. Like, I'm always impressed with people's birth stories when they talk about like getting to the hospital, like when their contractions are coming like pretty close together. Like, you have to be very, very motivated. And I think for me, my motivation wasn't necessarily there to make it to the hospital, because if I would have had my dream birth, it would not have been in a hospital to begin with. I was doing that because that was the option. And I had looked into home birth support. And I did find one Korean hospital. They have beautiful services. They have like amazing staff there. I found them and they do support home birth, but with their protocols, I didn't qualify because it was my very first birth. And one of their protocols for safety is you have to have at least like one vaginal birth before they'll support your home birth.
So it was an unplanned home birth, but maybe in your subconscious a little bit, you were like, maybe I'll just stay home if things are going good.
Yeah. And I think that's what it was. Because we were in that point where they were going to try and get me into the car. And like you said, like for me, it seemed like an insurmountable task to even right. get out of the bathroom, put on a robe to get into the car, to go up to the hospital. Like that seemed like the most daunting thing in the world. And of course, if there was like some emergency signs going on, if I had been in a state where something was going wrong, like Sean would have picked me up and got me to the car and got me to medical services. But after we decided, okay, we're going to try to get up, we're going to go to the hospital, pretty much transition hit like right in those next couple of waves, because I started getting like the total body shakes. And by this point I was on the toilet again, just because that was a comfortable position. And I got like total body shakes. Like my body went in full, like very, very powerful and just like sweeping waves and contractions that were going on. And I looked at both of them and I just said, I need to stay here. And then they were both like shifted gears. They were like, okay, we're staying here. Like, this is the new plan. Like, we're going to shift and this is the new plan. And the way Sean tells it, he was actually good. Like once I said definitively that I'm staying here, and he said that like his brain switched really easily, where it was like, okay, that makes it easy. We don't have to go to the hospital. We don't have to get into the car. Like everything can happen right here.
Did you guys have like some things, like any like equipment or things that you needed? Or I mean, not let's be real, not that you like really need stuff, but.
Well, I mean, the funny thing was, and so we didn't have any like prepared supplies or anything like that. After a couple hours, I mean, she was born, before 3 p.m. in the afternoon, like a little bit before 3 p.m. And so I was like on my knees, and I was just like assumed a position that felt good, where I was just kind of like leaning over the side of the tub at that point. And it was one of those things, if you've been through labor, you kind of know that like when you're hitting those like transitional contractions, it's like the only thing to do is just to like go forward and push through it and get through it, just because whenever I would change positions, she would have like, my baby would have like a big movement go on. And if I would stay still, things would calm down, but then that's not going to get you closer to meeting your baby.
Right.
And so it was one of those things where keep moving, keep staying attuned to what your body is trying to do. And pretty much just get your mind out of the way and let your body do its job is what I tried to go over a lot in my head. And like one of the mantras that I kept coming to was, my waves cannot be bigger than me because they are me. And that one really, really stuck with me. It's funny what your brain kind of clings to, like when you're in that labor land, and like what phrases and what breathing patterns you find like to help you cope with it.
Yeah.
And so I was really lucky that, we were in the home setting and I was able to like be in tune with all of that, which was really nice with really no distractions. So at any rate, like she was born before, 3 PM. And so like she came like really, really quick for it, all things considered.
Yeah.
And we had like some supplies just because of my veterinary stuff, like Sean. And so we had like my stethoscope and like, we had like plenty of towels and we had things to take care of her. And when she came out, like she didn't cry, but her eyes were like bright and her eyes were like looking around everywhere. We were able to get some of the like amniotic fluid out of her mouth and to able to like clear that out a bit just to make sure, but she didn't have any signs of struggle. Like when she came out, she was very alert. Like she was moving her hands everywhere. Like she was moving around. She was getting like snuggled up close to us. And Sean got to catch her on the way out, which was really beautiful, really cool. And that's something that really stuck with me was that's something that stuck with me when I was looking at like pictures of like natural labor in the hospital and trying to like envision that. It was just something that I couldn't ever really visualize in my mind for me. So I think you're right. I think that that subconscious like kept us there in like our safe little space.
Yeah.
It's just like, I just had that conviction in my bones that like, this is exactly where I need to be, like to have this baby. Like my mind is exactly where it needs to be. Like my body is here. Where it needs to be. I have people who really, really love me, like just in this space right now. And I get a little emotional just like talking about it, but that's what I told women. It's like, I don't necessarily recommend that because you might not feel safe in that scenario. Like I felt very safe and things were going smoothly and were going well. I can't necessarily recommend that for everybody who's doing like their birth goals and their birth choices, because if you feel safer at the hospital where people can intervene and people can help, then that's where you need to be. You just need to choose like where you feel the safest.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. It's like home birth is definitely not for everybody. Like you have to have the confidence and the autonomy to like kind of, I don't want to say take your care into your own hands, even with planned home birth, but you do have to have that like, you know, full consent of like, I understand the risks and benefits and this is where I feel best and this is where I feel safest. And for many people, that's not at home. And that is okay. Like a lot of people, they want the medical care. They want the doctors. They want their guidance. And for some women, they don't. They kind of trust themselves to do their own research and they feel more confident, safe, and comfortable in their homes versus at the hospital. And so, you know, that's why it's great that, you know, we have these options and you can birth at home, you can birth at the hospital, you can birth at the birth center, which is like kind of an in between, because everybody needs to, you know, go where they feel safest. And that vastly varies for a lot of women. It really does. So that's like amazing that you, in the middle of like transition, were able to kind of recognize like, this is where I need to be. And, you know, it does make me wonder, like, you're like, I could just never envision myself at the hospital. Like you could never envision yourself birthing your baby into the hands of a stranger. You always envisioned yourself, you know, birthing your baby into the hands of your husband. And that, you know, happened at home. And I think probably subconsciously throughout your whole pregnancy, you maybe had it in the back of your head, like, okay, if this goes good, this is where I'm staying. And you had a doula and a birth team and your husband, and you guys, you know, obviously have a vast amount of experience between the two, three of you really, that were there. And so that's amazing. I remember with my first birth, looking at my doula and being like, do I have to go? Like, I was in transition at home. So I relate so much to you. I knew I was very, very dilated at that point. And I was like, do I really have to go? Because I really, really don't want to. And I did end up going with her. And girl, that car ride and walking into the hospital, oh my God, it sucked. It sucked. And that's why the second time around, I was like, I am planning to stay home from the get-go. I'm doing this because the last thing I wanted to do in that moment, oh, that was the worst car ride ever. I was like 8 centimeters when we left my house, 7 to 8 centimeters. And I wanted to stay home so bad, but we had nothing. My husband was like, what? We hadn't even talked about that. So it was not in the cards at that point, but I love that for you. That is amazing. I mean, what a fun, beautiful story. You birthed her in your bathroom, you said?
Yes. Yep. Birthed her in the bathroom. And like, to be fair, like the Korean houses, they kind of have like fancier bathrooms than you would stateside. So okay. It was like, we had plenty of space in there, which was great. And so that was nice. And like Sean got to catch her, and we kind of joke, like she came out with the umbilical cord just completely fine. And then he accidentally gave her like a cord scarf, like around her neck while he was like catching her and like making sure that like, she didn't slip anywhere. And like when he was passing her to me. So we got a little chuckle out of that. Like, of course, like a dad move, like to, oops, okay. Wrap the cord around her neck.
Gave her a nuchal cord.
Yeah. A little bit. But it was just really, really, like you can't really describe it too much. Like it's like a runner's high is the class, yes, the closest you could probably get, but that doesn't even come close to it. But it was just beautiful, and it was like, it was so beautiful, and it was like so powerful and intimate. And high, like I wouldn't want it any other way. It worked out perfectly for us and for our family.
Yeah.
And it's because I was owning that decision too. Like, if things went well, then that was on me. And if things didn't go well, like just having that ownership in that decision. And we all had that trust. We all had that trust in that room. For it was like, okay, I'm making this decision, and it's how do I say that? It's like, yeah, I'm making this decision, and I own responsibility.
I was going to say,
for the outcomes,
you have to accept the responsibility of what happens. You do. And yes, that's a huge part of home birth. You have to accept that for good, you know, for good or for bad. And most of the time it's for good. You know, but you do, and I think same with birthing in the hospital, even like you have to accept the responsibility of where, you know, you're choosing to do this because it is your choice in the end.
Yes.
Well, that's, I love exactly that. Yeah. I mean, so you're 4 months postpartum, correct?
Yes. 4 months postpartum.
Yep. How are you feeling, like, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically? How is everything? How has it been since?
It's been really good since. And I was a little bit nervous. Like, we did go to the hospital on base for the aftercare.
Okay.
And so we spent 2 days in the hospital just so baby could get the initial blood test and I could get checked out and checked over. And then recovery I felt like a little bit too good after labor. And so I kind of overdid it, like,
yep.
Kind of overdid it a little bit. But so my mom actually came into town, and so she was a big help. And my dad was here in town as well. Funny story, because my mom, when she took off from stateside, I wasn't even in labor, and then by the time she landed in Korea, she had a grandbaby, her first.
I bet she was so excited. That was probably like the best thing in the world for her.
And so she was like happy crying in the baggage claim section, and people were like patting her on the back, and they were like, "No, it's okay, the luggage is coming." And she was like, "No, I have a granddaughter." She was like showing them pictures. It's my first grandbaby, and my dad got to meet his first grandbaby. And so that was really sweet and really nice. But like I said, he hadn't noticed that I was in labor and like all this was going down because he was doing some studying on his, he's a pilot. So he had like some training he was doing on his iPad and stuff upstairs. And so he was just like letting us be, it's fine. Sean came out at one point and he was like, looks like we're having this baby at home. And my dad was like, okay, let me know if you need anything. He was just completely calm and collected. And so I had a lot of good support with the recovery stage. And like, Sean is an amazing cook. So he was like cooking us dinner. My mom was cooking us yummy meals. Like everybody was just like pitching in and helping out. It was really good. And then I did have a like stage one, stage two tear. And so that had to heal. And so like I felt good after labor, but then taking it like maybe a little bit too far, like doing a bit too much in those first few days. I just recommend like take it easy. Your mind might be ready to go, because you have like that adrenaline rush. But like be kind to your body. Like your body just went through a lot. Like your pelvic floor just went through a lot. Mm-hmm. And so try to be kind on your body and be mindful of that. And so, yeah, that recovery time like went well. Like she is a great little baby. Like she's definitely opinionated. She'll let you know like when she likes something or when she doesn't like something. And so she'll communicate that a lot. But yeah, it's just, we're getting the hang of it. Like first kid, finding your balance and like finding your role and being like really patient on yourself and like patient with each other and having like a lot of grace. And you're all just figuring it out for the first time, right? Like it's his first time being a dad, my first time being a mom. It's Sylvia's first time like being a baby in the world. Like everyone is just trying to figure out. And so just having a lot of like that patience and like grace as you're going through the days, because there's moments when you feel like you're doing really, really well. Like, okay, I'm figuring things out. And then there's moments where you're like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm not doing anything right today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And just as you're adapting and just like finding those, finding those little moments each day, because there's always a moment each day that went well. And so try to focus on those.
And I always tell everybody like 3 to 4 months is when I think you like finally get to come up for air, you know, like those first 3 to 4 months are for sure the hardest. Like it is a huge transition. Everything about your life takes a major shift. Making space for a new baby, a whole new human, like that's huge. And we kind of downplay it. And in reality, it's a huge change. And so I think I always say like, give yourself 6 months to adjust to any time you add a new family member, a new baby. But especially those first like 3 to 4 months. I mean, I remember hitting like 3 to 4 months and being like, okay, I finally feel like, and not to say, look, those first 3 months were terrible, but it's hard. You're sleep deprived. You're physically healing. You also have so many hormones and mental and emotional things that you're processing. Your life is changing. And so I remember hitting 4 months and being like, okay, I think I can do this. I think I can keep this human alive. And I think I can also keep myself alive and my marriage alive and my friendships alive. 3 to 4 months is really that spot where things start to fall into place. It's a beautiful time.
Exactly. And you can kind of mentally prepare, but then like when you're in it, it's a whole other conversation. And so I think that's a big part of it. And so, I think, you hit the nail on the head as well, because you're figuring every little part out. Yeah. Like if you're breastfeeding, you're figuring out like what works best for baby, and what works best for you. And so like Sylvia, she's definitely a Velcro kid. Like she likes baby wearing, she likes to be carried around. And so we found our groove with that.
Yeah.
And figuring out like, okay, today is a day where she can be down for a nap, kind of like solo napping. Or there's days where like, she just wants to be like a Velcro kid and be like contact napping. And so kids go through these, like a lot of babies go through these days and these changes. And so once you figure it out, it might be good for like a week, and then they're going to switch the script on you again. And so just be prepared for that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I loved hearing like your birth story. It just was very unique and so special, and just, it was really fun to hear. So thank you for taking your time and sharing it. The one last thing I ask everybody is just like your biggest piece of advice or takeaway after being through, you know, everything you went through during your pregnancy, during your birth, and now 4 months postpartum.
So that's a good question. My biggest piece of advice through the pregnancy would definitely be like, trust your body and trust your baby and get the information you need to make your choices.
Yeah.
And reach out to people who have had good birth experiences and have had birth experiences that you want to emulate. Mm-hmm. Really just surround yourself with that positive outlook. You can recognize that, yes, things might go wrong or things can go wrong. And just also recognize that, like, the majority of the time, everything is going to be okay.
Yeah.
And just trust that.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really try to dig deep and just like find that trust. And additionally, I would say, as you're going through your labor and then into those like first months, what would be my advice? Yeah, I would say in those first 3 months, someone gave me a really good piece of advice. My friend said, your only job in those first 3 months are to be that baby's pillow and that baby's meals. And I thought, okay, that's a good way to put it, because that keeps your expectations a little bit in check. But you don't have to be doing it all. You don't have to get the hang of it right away. It's like, just take your time and be patient with yourself and be patient with those around you. And yeah, trust yourself. You got
yes.
it.
Yes. I love it. I couldn't agree more. Those are great, you know, piece of advice. And I agree. Like, you just have to, pregnancy, birth, postpartum, you know, trust yourself. Even if you do have things that come up and you do have some red flags and you do have complications, you can still trust like into your intuition, and trust into the choices that you're making. And that, you know, you have to start then, because you're going to spend the next like 18 years plus or minus advocating for your child. And it really starts in pregnancy. It really does. So I love that. And again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your evening, which is my 7 a.m. I'm so glad we finally got this all aligned. And I really enjoyed hearing your birth story.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for your podcast and all of the education that you're sharing with folks. Really appreciate it.
Okay, one last thing we're going to add in that Patricia and I stopped our recording before we threw in is just where to reach her, where to find her. So if you want to share that with us.
Yes, anyone can reach out to me. I have email patricia@birthandbreathe.com. And so that's an easy way to reach out to me. And then also I'm on Facebook as Patricia Baker. And okay, that's an easy one to reach out.
You said birthandbreathe.com, correct?
Correct. Patricia okay. at birthandbreathe.com.
Patricia at birthandbreathe.com. Okay, cool. I'm going to put that also in the show notes of the podcast. So it should be like a quick, easy little link down there. If you scroll down to the bottom under the show notes that you can click on. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Anyone could reach out. I love sharing evidence-based information and birth planning, birth goals and choices to help out with that. So anyone can reach out.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for listening to another episode of What the Bump. Make sure to follow us over on Instagram @WhatTheBumpCLT. Check out our website, WhatTheBumpCLT.com. Make sure to leave a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or whatever platform you are listening on. And tune in every Monday at 9 a.m. for a new episode. Remember that this podcast is for educational purposes only. I will see you next week in the next episode.